What's up, all you cool beardos? This is Paul here with a quick disclaimer before the episode starts. So, Andy and I do our darndest to put out these high-quality episodes, but sometimes stuff just happens. We typically check our recording sound before each episode starts, and somehow we did not catch that I had a crackling noise throughout my recording whenever I would talk. So I just wanted to apologize that whenever I talk, you're going to hear this crackling noise. I think it kind of sounds like a crackling fire. So I say, you know, cook up some s'mores, get some dandies, vegan marshmallows, cook up some s'mores, check out this bonus episode, pretend that you're just hanging out with us around the campfire. But yeah, I just wanted to apologize for that little audio unforeseen thing that happened. This has been something that, you know, for a while we've known that my computer has been on the fritz, and we try to catch it when these things happen, but they've been happening more and more frequently. So we finally decided it was probably time for me to get a new computer. So thanks to all the you know, all you Patreon donors, we were able to purchase a new computer that is hopefully going to have much higher quality and better recordings and not have these sort of unforeseen things happen. So again, thank you, because you made this possible. This is an episode for you. And yeah, sit back, get some s'mores, get some hot chocolate, and enjoy the show.
What's up, weirdos? You're listening to a beautifully backstabbing bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to, don't be a jerk.
Don't let me answer your question first. I'm not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
I know this isn't your first time tuning in, but if it is, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And of course, you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or leave a comment below.
In today's bonus episode, we're going to discuss our final thoughts on Tiger King, Murder, Mayhem, and Madness.
Paul, it feels like we were just talking about this, nay, but what, 2 days ago?
2 days ago. And then we furiously finished watching the series immediately afterwards.
All right. So, Beardos, this is a bonus episode. It's a follow-up to our the bonus episode we just put out, in which we reviewed the first two episodes of Tiger King, a new Netflix original series that came out 5 days ago. It is, people are just like flipping their lid about this thing, Paul, and everyone and everyone was like, Beard Vegans, there are animals involved in this, so clearly you should talk about it. We watched it and went, holy crap, let's record an episode. And after the first two episodes, we said, hey, let's talk about where we think this is going, what we feel about the theme so far, and let's speculate a little bit on, how we think this is all going to end up, and if this is going to have an animal rights message or anything like that. That was the last bonus episode. If you have not listened to it for some reason, I would definitely recommend listening to that one first, because I think this episode is going to be significantly shorter. Famous last words, of course, but I think this is not going to be like a super nitpicky episode like the last one was. It's going to be more of like kind of our overall thoughts and impressions on the entire 7-part series. Paul, I normally take notes while I'm watching things I know we're going to review, but for the last couple episodes, I was like, I just need to take in this mind-bending trash TV experience that I'm watching right now.
Yes, Andy, you know, you said something before we started recording that like almost made me feel bad, because this is just, because I will even admit it, like, I could say that I was watching this for like the animal research purposes to see what the sort of animal messages they were saying, but really I was watching this because it was an incredibly like interesting story, and so it's pretty much for entertainment purposes. And there is something, I guess, a little sick about exploiting, you know, quote unquote weirdos in order to get famous, to get money, to make movies and stuff like that, which I would say is what this film was doing, is exploiting a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, much like the tale that unravels in Tiger King, there's so many different layers. And I would say that there are a lot of layers to the exploitation that are happening as a result of this film. Obviously, the most clear example of that is the animals, the big cats, and I guess a couple of elephants and bears and whatnot that are being exploited. But then there's, of course, all of the humans that are being exploited by the ringleaders of so many of these various like weird, sketchy zoo operations. But it does feel like I said this in the main episode where we kind of announced we were doing this. It felt like in the moment I was like, yeah, throw a chair. But it did feel like watching like a kind of a sad episode of Jerry Springer where you're like, these people are outrageous and they're very entertaining. But at the core for a lot of these people, there is just sort of this underlying sadness to them. And that does not excuse the horrific exploitation that they take part in, both of the animals and the human beings that they take advantage of. But there is something that feels a little bit morbid about finding so much entertainment from this. And certainly I found so much entertainment from this. But at the end of the day, it's obviously very sad because I would say the animals who were like the most exploited were the least focused on in this entire thing.
Yeah. And I will say, I think in the last episode, at the towards the end especially, but in the last episode, it was, I would say the last episode just was a very sad episode. I feel like that was an episode where they have these, a lot of the side characters, a lot of these people that worked with Joe Exotic, like they had a lot of these, you know, these interviews that they, I think very skillfully, this whole thing, I feel like was very masterfully put together and edited, but they had a lot of these interviews of the most recent, like interviews with these people. So these are things that, I mean, they could have gotten these interviews as recent as like within a couple months probably. And they had not been interviewing, they had been interviewing those people this whole time, but these most recent ones, they had a lot of these like really long shots where after the person would finish talking, they just kind of kept the camera on the person. And these people, a lot of them just seemed like so sad and so kind of, I guess, not to put emotions into their mouths. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but to project emotions onto them. But like a lot of them just seemed like sad about all of the stuff that had happened. Like this whole thing, they were just like, this sucked. And this was like my life for 15 years, you know? And it was just really, it was very sad.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I guess perhaps leaving aside the biggest personalities, which I'm going to go ahead and say are obviously Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, Carol Baskin, and Doc Antle turned out to be way less of a player after those first two episodes that we watched. It seemed like he kind of faded into the background a little bit, popped in here and there. But sort of excluding those people and all the other kind of lesser like ringleader, animal collector type people, that there was just, yeah, this real sense of despair from so many of the people, and that this show knows what it's doing. It's really carefully metering out information so that you feel one way about things. And then at the end, it's like, no, actually all this was like really sad. And, you know, like this subject for all of these people that are working, for a lot of them, especially I would say the Joe Exotic workers, you know, he's getting people that are really down on their luck, often like straight out of jail, apparently, and people that have no other options and feel very vulnerable and can be taken advantage of. And maybe they do find a home that's accepting for them under Joe's wing. But, you know, like their lives clearly have had some really sad circumstances that have led them to that point. And so it does feel like a little gross to be finding entertainment in that, especially, I don't know, like the series is clearly like that. You want this, we're going to give you more of this. Like, it's not, I don't know if it really indicts the viewers at all, but it's definitely not trying to be some, I would say, incredibly thoughtful introspection on this whole thing. Like, it's just kind of like, look how outrageous this all is.
I think it thinks it's doing that at the very end, though. Like, Like, I think that the last 10 minutes of this film was what I wish, in terms of messaging, the last 10 minutes of it was what I wish the entire thing, the entire series was.
Yeah. Yeah. The last 10 minutes is when it's kind of like you see Joe's turnaround, which isn't even really for altruistic reasons. It's just like, well, I can't have him, so nobody can, you know. But it is the fact that he understands that what he's doing to these animals isn't great. And he's only in the position to say that now that he can't continue to do it. I doubt that he would come to that epiphany if he was still running his operation smoothly.
Can I say something, Andy? That I think, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but the it was this last 10 minutes, which I think was, like, in terms of any sort of ethical message, I think is where you want to look if you want to find one in this series. But in the last 10 minutes, that one of the other workers with Joe Exotic, Saf, says, like, you know, all these people spent millions of dollars, all these years, all this time and effort and energy. And they all kind of say that they were, like, doing the best thing for the animals, but really it's just, they were doing these things for themselves, for these personal gains. And really, like, the animals were kind of, like, pushed to the side of this whole saga. And I don't know if the documentary did this on purpose, but, like, that's also what the documentary did. Because I would say from the first two episodes that we watched, we were still hopeful that the animals would be a focus of it. And then over time, they just become less and less of a focus in the exact, like, it is exactly paralleled with what actually happened with this, like, with what unfolded in that, like, it starts as this saga where, like, Carol is going after Joe to get his business shut down and stuff like that. But it, I feel like it just turns into this, it all turns into this personal thing. That's all very human centric. And that's exactly what the documentary did as well.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of films that use the actual medium of the film and the type of editing and the framing of the shots to reflect what is actually happening. You know, like, for instance, Paul, I don't think you've seen The Lighthouse.
I have not.
But so The Lighthouse is a film that, you know, it's shot in like a 3:4 aspect ratio. It's almost square. And, it, you know, it's like the way the film is presented is designed to make you feel how the characters are feeling. And it's designed to essentially reflect the situation. And that can be done in a very artful way. But if you're a series where, like, the medium of your message starts to reflect what's happening to the animals, and you think you could just make up for it with, like, a okay message in the final 5 minutes, like, I feel like it just kind of reinforced the message that the animals were, like, really not ultimately that important to this entire story. Because it was towards the end, they point out that the animal care that they were receiving, whatever minimal it was, went way down after Joe had spent all of his money trying to, you know, mess with Carol.
Yeah. And in what I think, Andy, again, masterfully done, I think was a very powerful moment right at the end of the movie, is when they play the news clips of when Joe first opened what he at least called back then a rescue. And he, like, it's this film of a young Joe Exotic basically saying, like, these animals don't belong in places like this and they belong in their natural habitat. And we should pass laws to prevent, like, cat breeding and stuff like that. And I felt like that was one of the most sad moments where it was this person who apparently did have, like, somewhat good intentions starting this thing, and the kind of, I guess, the, I don't know, fame or money or just over time, like, the his actual care about these animals just declined.
Or let me present that it could have just been a different manipulation tactic. You know, we see so many people in this movement use animals to bring people under their, you know, their wing and manipulate them. And maybe that was still what was happening back then. But it certainly, the film, the series presents it like he was a lot more young and idealistic and altruistically minded at that point.
Andy, it certainly is possible. I'm choosing to believe that that's not the case, but But on that note of what you were saying of the movie, the film, the series is presenting it like that. I think my biggest critique of the series is that I think they are very inconsistent in how they are choosing to represent the different players in this whole thing, because like one episode you're like, ah, okay, this person's a real scumbag, and next episode they kind of really present like hard hitting sympathy for that person, and then the next episode they're like, oh, just kidding, this person really is terrible. And I feel like it makes me nervous that they, you know, had very purposeful editing to really make people look how they wanted them to look, and you know, it makes me worry that some things, you know, were not as truthful or were framed in such a way that you got a different impression.
Well, so Paul, on that note, I did remark to you about this a little bit off air, but I think that like we all know that when we are watching a movie or a TV show, that on some level we're being manipulated into the point of view that the creator wants us to have, the editor wants us to have, the cinematographer wants us to have. But I also think that a lot of us, myself included, like this show demonstrated just how easily I, and I'm assuming lots of others, feel a sense of an understanding of the truth based off of what we have seen without ever thinking about what haven't we seen and how strong are the intentions of the creator. And like, I think like I was like, oh yeah, duh, like obviously everyone has a point of view, but just the fact that every episode I was like, oh, I thought this about this person, but actually it's this. And yes, that's good, interesting storytelling, but at the same time, it's like, how are we to actually trust what has been presented to us by the end of this whole saga? And I don't know, like I would say you can't. And obviously you just have to say, well, I guess this was a piece of entertainment for me. And I passed, you know, the, you know, 5 hours or whatever collectively that it was to watch this whole thing. And it was a cool thing to take in, but it's not like the stone cold truth. But, you know, you see things like, was it Making a Murderer? And people are so sure that this guy didn't do it. And then like more information comes out and you're like, well, I don't know if that really exonerates him. But also like clearly the filmmakers left things out that could potentially make people feel a different way or feel less strongly about this. And this 7-part series is like a perfect depiction of how easily we as viewers are manipulated into believing that something is the truth or that we should feel a certain way about something.
And Andy, I think the reason why that kind of that's specifically sucks in this case is because I think I mentioned this, or one of us mentioned this in the first bonus episode, that I was really hoping they would take some solid stance on animal exploitation, in that they would give the viewer something to be like, look at this, like this is the good thing. This is what we should be striving to do. But because they both represent at times Joe Exotic as the bad guy and Carol as also being a bad in her own way, they don't give you someone to be like, This is what we should be striving for. Like, no one, rarely do people even say like, oh, we need to, you know, help out the tigers, their natural habitat, or what they don't even address, you know, what is the solution to all of these people that have all these zoos and stuff like that. Because yeah, we want to, Carol is trying to like pass laws to say that they can't buy them as pets and those sorts of things, and limit what those zoo owners can do. But that doesn't change the fact that if all those zoos get abolished, it's like those tigers still have to go somewhere. And if Carol is also, if they're going to her place and her place might not also be that good, then what are they supposed to do? Like, where are these animals going to go where they're not going to be exploited to some extent? And so that's the thing that was kind of like, and I'm not even saying, because again, it's like, I don't know what to trust in this film. I don't know whether their representation of Carol is in fact factual. And I'm just saying that because I know, I feel like there are certainly a lot of people that are really fans of her or really behind what she does, and people that maybe are against what she does or have critiques of what she does. But like, I don't know what the truth of the matter is. But my point is that it kind of leaves the viewer being like, well, shit, like that exploit, like people watching that whole thing, they get to the very end and you're like, oh yeah, the animal exploitation does kind of suck. And then it all ends.
Yeah, that's like the whole message of the thing is like animal exploitation kind of sucks. Like, you know, like I think about the takeaways for me are ones that I have already had as a result of, you know, being vegan, living a vegan life and exposing myself to information and educating myself already, which is that these operations are bad and that Carol's operation is possibly not ideal and also maybe bad, maybe just as bad or, you know, under a similar like ballpark of maybe it's not like the best thing for these animals type of situation. But that's not really what I got from watching the documentary necessarily. Like it didn't really explain why petting these cubs is bad. Like I guess it said that like they get taken from their mothers early on. That was like a fleeting throwaway line almost. But overall, there wasn't anything that made me, I don't think someone that's used to going to a zoo and taking in like swimming with the dolphins or something like that would watch it and go, oh yeah, that's like really like horrific. Or even if it doesn't feel horrific, it's still exploiting them. And isn't that ultimately bad, no matter, even if it's not like graphically horrible or something like that? Like this is clearly not the purpose of this series whatsoever. The purpose of this series is to be sensationalist and to exploit some people that have exploited others, and also to exploit a lot of people that are kind of down on their luck.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, Andy, after watching the series and kind of doing a little, very quickly, just doing a little Googling around about it all, you know, I and having also many people pointing towards like Carol's response to this, because obviously she was, as I would not have been either if that were me, she was not happy with her portrayal in this film. And just reading through this really lengthy response. So Andy, like if I was accused of murdering my spouse, like, that would probably be the thing that I would be focusing on in my like rebuttal of this film, because if I was accused of it and I didn't do it, that would be like horrific to me. That would be absolutely terrible. And so I say, I guess somewhat understandably, like this really lengthy response that she wrote and posted on like the Big Cat Rescue page, it starts off, the first paragraph is kind of mentions, you know, like these documentary makers came to me and said, we're going to make the next Blackfish. Do you want to be a part of it? And so she was like, of course I signed on. But besides that, she pretty much spends the whole time just kind of like giving her evidence as to what was false about the accusations about her murdering her husband, and spends like this very lengthy thing responding to that with pretty much like no mention of any sort of animal issues, no mention of, not really any even rebuttals of the few times in the series where people made claims about her rescue and how it actually wasn't treating animals very well. And again, it just like, it speaks to this larger issue where it's like this allegedly was supposed to be a movie about these animal issues. And it just made it so human centric that even like the person who is supposed to be for the animals, like kind of, I've seen some people pointing towards her response to be like, no, actually she's a good guy, read this response. But that doesn't tell me anything about like her ethics about animals or anything like that. So like, it doesn't really make me change my mind about her in terms of the animal things. Again, it's like, of course she's going to rebut these claims that she killed her husband. I would expect her to, and maybe she did it, maybe she didn't, I don't know. But I was hoping that, especially on the Big Cat Rescue page, there would be more about maybe like the animal issues, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see an article that she put out that's like, here's why what I do is different than what Joe Exotic does. Here's why what I do is deserving of the name Rescue.
Yeah.
I think all of those points are well taken. And yeah, Paul, I'm just kind of like imagining Carol watching the show, because when we did our check-in after the first two episodes, I pointed out that there's just a few moments where the show was like, duh, 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 Carol's great, duh, 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 but maybe she's not. And then it like kind of moves on. I feel like every time those moments happen, she'd be like, wait a second, I thought I was supposed to be the good guy in all of this.
Yeah.
And then the end of the second episode happens and it's like, but also she killed her husband, or did she? And then it's like, fuck, now this is, you know, but like that's, that's what this show is. It's not interested in the ethics of, like, it's not really, it doesn't seem to be interested in the ethics of animal captivity or exploitation. And I don't even know if it's interested in the exploitation of the humans that it puts on screen either.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I do want to talk more about that. I just wanted to quickly say, Andy, like, in terms of, you know, just a comment on how things are edited to make you feel a certain way. Every time they would mention Carol, like, as possibly being this, you know, manipulative, like, leader of all these people who are, like, giving her all this free labor and stuff like that, and how she's actually this very, like, conniving person, they would always cut to these, like, sometimes slow-mo videos of her riding this bike, and it was supposed to be like, look at this big boss, like, doing this stuff. But they could have so easily, it's like this jovial woman riding a, like, cat print bike. They so easily could have cut that in a different way that was like, look how silly this woman is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Paul, like, as far as, like, the editing and everything goes, it just, like, at the end of it, I went, I'm sure there's, like, a lot of truth to all of this, but just knowing how easily I was manipulated in this whole experience, seemingly more so than a lot of other documentary experiences I've had, maybe just because this thing goes out of its way to be like, you thought it was like this, but ha, it's not. Every episode, multiple times per episode, you know, maybe that's why I just, at the end of it, I was like, I don't really know what I'm supposed to take away or what I'm supposed to believe from all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy, I don't think that this is going to have any sort of lasting impression on, like, animal issues at all.
No, definitely not. 100% no. It's going to be a thing that everyone is, like, freaking out about for, like, a month or two at most. Just like, you know, like Abducted in Plain Sight or whatever that show was that I did not watch. But seems like it has a similar vibe to this in that it's like, every time you think it's gotten to the worst thing, it keeps getting worse.
Yeah, no, totally. And just to, again, highlight the point that you were just making, that I don't even think this film puts enough into the human abuse that was happening throughout the film as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because there was just so much ground to cover. Like, even just what Doc Antle was doing to those, like, teenage women, you know, that he was bringing in and grooming. And, you know, like, that's a horrific story that is, like, 15 minutes in this whole thing, you know? And, like, it was horrific, but it also, I kind of wanted the film to be like, you know, record scratch style, be like, you all understand that we're talking about, like, a horrible predator right now, right? You know, like, it's someone that's, like, serially abusing and grooming, like, underage people. You know, it's like, but it's like, nope, it just keeps going because here's the next horrible thing that we're going to tell you about.
Yeah, Andy, you said at the after the second episode, you're like, oh, clearly Doc Antle is the big bad of this show. And that's how they frame it in the first two episodes. And then he drops out almost completely and gets replaced with that guy, Jeff, whatever his last name is. And
is that bandana hat combo guy?
That's him.
Never ripped, not with that combo.
Ripped jeans. Like, and that guy is certainly also very shitty. And like, they talk about how he, like, physically abused his first wife, but they really keep emphasizing, like, this guy is, like, so, like, this guy was so bad to everyone on the zoo and all this stuff and stuff. And they didn't really, like, I don't know, like, clearly that guy's a shitbag, but I feel like they didn't, like, Doc Antle, I think, is, like, more obviously this, like, holy shit, this guy is, like, operating at a whole nother level of shittiness.
It might just be because of Jeff's wardrobe choices, but, like, he felt like a typecast, like, second or third tier, like, street thug character that you'd see, you know,
yeah.
like biker guy or something like that. That's like, you're supposed to know this is a bad dude just from visually looking at him. Also, every time he smiled, that smirk was like, fuck, this guy is bad. But, like, Doc Antle is just like this, like, jovial guy in his safari outfit. And to me, that is way more insidious.
Yeah. No, because I think Jeff, like, isn't pretending to be a nice guy, whereas Doc Antle is, like, pretending to be a good guy.
Yeah. And yeah, oh, man, I don't know. It's just so many, like, just horrible people in this thing.
Yeah. So many horrible people, Andy, that apparently just got away with doing horrible things.
And so let me ask you this, in terms of the manipulation and in terms of horrible people, like, this show is essentially not that people are, you know, people are multidimensional and there's gray areas and everything, but this show the whole time is kind of like, Joe is kind of quirky and you understand his appeal, but also he's doing all these really horrible things and he's very manipulative. And you know, the stuff that he says about Carol, the montages of him like blowing up effigies of her and shooting her and like all this stuff, it's horrific. But also the show at the end is kind of like, also you should feel kind of bad for this guy, which is not to say that people that have been like sort of rejected by society, even if they've done bad things to others, don't deserve some level of sympathy, I guess. But it did feel kind of like unearned. I felt that this series was like, it was almost just showing off how much it could manipulate the viewer at that point. It's like, and now we're going to make you like Joe a little bit, or at least feel bad for him.
Yeah, Andy, you forget that he's literally on trial for trying to hire someone to murder someone else, which is like undisputable that he actually did that. But like, it almost
makes
you. Or
was it, Paul?
Andy, it blows my mind that those other people, I feel like at the end, they kind of insinuate that the government is also going to go after all of those other people involved. But it like blows my mind that at one point, Jeff on film literally says, oh yeah, there were times when I was, you know, getting, like I would encourage Joe to say things about wanting to murder Carol so that I could get the sound clip, because he was, you know, wired. He was like wired, so he was recording everything that Joe was saying. And I was like, isn't that literally entrapment? And like, aren't you literally just admitting that you were a part of this thing too?
It's not the same as entrapment, but I mean, that's like what people do. You're like, I'm going to be an informant, so I'm going to go in there and I'm going to spur the conversation that would get someone to say the thing. But if you like, without like looking up the legal definition, entrapment is more if you like convince someone to do something that they wouldn't otherwise be prone to doing, and then you arrest them for it. Like, that's what entrapment is.
Andy, it just seems to me like Jeff, the actual hitman, and then that other guy with the long hair that was the original informant, like it seems like they were all just as involved in this as Joe was.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. They all seem to have some horrible level involvement and were all quite shitty.
Like the fact that they found Joe guilty of this thing, of hiring this hitman, but also did not convict the hitman himself, is like, yes, we will hire the person that hires someone else to kill someone, but not the person that would actually kill someone.
Yeah, it's all very convoluted, because I think he was like, of course, you know, he was like, of course I would never do this for $3,000, like that's silly, I would never do it for $1 million or whatever. But it does feel like people definitely got off the hook.
Yeah, I hope, Andy, like those people seem like real shitbags. That like whole clique of people, I hope that they, even the guy with that carried around the monkey and the baby Bjorn, I hope that they all get what's coming to them.
I used to work for somebody who was like that and who hired lots of people that were kind of fresh out of jail and that weren't like randos, like that were like his friends that were finally getting out of jail. And I am so well acquainted with like that genre of human being that it was giving me flashbacks like watching that. And yeah, they all just seem super sketchy.
Yes, no, for sure. I'm disappointed, I think, even though it's like, this was, I cannot stop thinking about this and talking about it and looking up stuff about it. I wish it was different.
Yeah, I mean I feel the same way. I think looking back on what our hopes and predictions were for the series. One, I was totally wrong. The murder plot didn't really come in until, was it episode 7 or maybe I think at the end of episode 6, they brought it in. And I was like, that's going to come in at like 4 and there's going to be all this other stuff. It was almost anticlimactic because that's what I knew about the whole thing. And it almost feels like one of the least outrageous bits because it's just such a standard like movie thing, whereas everybody else is just like so larger than life in such a bad way.
Yeah, Andy, the stuff with Travis was like, that was that episode where he dies is like so dark, and I was, after watching that, I was just like, holy shit, like this is a very dark show.
Yeah, and Paul, you and I have kept saying to each other, like, I can't believe they have this footage. There's so many moments where I was like, damn, like, one, that I guess that's incredibly lucky from a filmmaker's point of view to be able to capture this stuff. But to capture sort of a moment of suicide, even if you're getting the reaction of the person witnessing it, is very horrific and not something you would ever really expect to have. And I was just like, yeah, I don't know how I would react in that situation either. I would just, my mouth would drop and I'd just be like, oh, that just happened. Let me process this for like 20 seconds.
I honestly think that the shot, I call it like a shot as if they, you know, they like set this up, but the shot that they did have, I think was even more powerful because it's like all you got was this guy's reaction to witnessing that and like, the just like shock for, you know, whatever it was, 20 seconds of just like stunned silence. And I think that it was so powerful because of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It still feels exploitive to me to include that in the film.
Yeah.
Even if it's not showing the actual death, but it is very powerful. I guess I just wish it was deployed in a more somber like series that was a little more reflective or something. But
yeah, because there are definitely characters like Travis's mom who they don't really bring in at all until after he dies, and they like bring in and she's basically like, yeah, everything sucks, I don't know why he was with Joe, and then Joe basically used me afterwards to kind of make it seem like I was okay with him marrying someone else after like 2 weeks. And then they never bring in her character. They never bring her in again. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay, this person has, her life was ruined because of these events that happened that I'm now taking, you know, all this entertainment out of.
Yeah. And you keep saying character, but they are in fact real human beings.
I know. It's hard not
to. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it is so immensely tragic. I think especially Travis and like a lot of the people that he was in relationships with, it felt just so just morbid and upsetting and yeah. But they kept getting footage and like audio recordings of things. And I'm like, why would anyone let this be recorded? And why would anyone like that one thing went, what was it when he went to his lawyer?
Well, Joe literally says, he tells the filmmaker, he's like, oh, hide the camera, make sure you get this on recording. And then the lawyer says like, you know, you should take care of all those files. You know what I mean, right? And he's like, oh yeah, I know what you mean. And then the next day, like all the files burn down and Joe's like, I don't know what happened. It's like, why did he want that on film?
Yeah, that was just so bizarre.
So again, bizarre. Maybe like that conversation happened, you know, years before the actual thing happened. But yeah, the way that they cut it makes it seem like it was the next day or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, I feel manipulated. I feel a little dirty having watched this, Paul.
Yeah, I'll probably still continue to read about it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm fascinated. It just felt like every character that you're like, oh, this person's just here to provide a little flavor, a little background context. And then like three episodes later, you're like, oh, but actually this guy burned down the alligator shed. And I kept waiting because I kept thinking like, how are other people they're bringing in going to come into play? Like they kept cutting to that one reporter that I was like, what's this person's role in the whole thing? And thankfully that was just kind of like a little flavor interview. But
yeah,
I was just so like, I just like couldn't trust how I was feeling about anything.
Yeah, that is very fair, Andy.
So, yeah, I guess that's all I really have to say about it without getting really nitpicky about little various little things.
But, yeah, I mean, we definitely want to know what, if you watched the show, what you thought about it. I imagine most, like, I don't know, it's I feel like it's hard not to be really excited about it right after you watch it. And then after reflecting about it a little bit, being like, oh, this was kind of icky, wasn't it? So Let us know if you had a similar experience. Let us know if you had a completely different experience watching it. Let us know your thoughts. You could email those into thebeardedvegans.com. Nope, that's not it. You can email those into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you again for supporting the Patreon, because if you're listening to this, you've either figured out a way to hack into Patreon or you're supporting us. And I'm going to choose to believe it is the latter. So thank you.
Maybe we just sent them a file.
That too. Who are you sending files to, Andy?
Nobody.
I'm wearing a wire. Who are you sending files to?
Well, Paul, if I was an undercover informant, and you know how there's always like a secret phrase they have to say, like pineapples, pineapples, and then like FBI swarms. Yeah. My secret phrase is actually the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegan, signing off.
All right. Oh, I just hit my mic.